You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter, and welcome to our first ever Defying Infinity podcast. We're so excited to start this up. We've actually started to, you know, make plans for this specific episode in the start of our winter term here at school, and yeah, it's just been a roller coaster, and we're just really excited to share what we've been doing. And I firstly want to introduce our guest today, Giachi! Yay! Yeah, so today we will be talking about language barriers in STEM fields. So this podcast and mainly this radio show mainly circles around STEM-based topics, but Giachi himself, he considers himself to, you know, not only be interested in math subjects, but also subjects in linguistics. So we wanted to combine the two, and hopefully you guys learn a thing or two out of this. I don't know. We'll see. So one thing I always found interesting is that people always consider math to be like a universal language, that it's easily understandable for people regardless of what language they speak. But today, we're going to talk about why people are so tempted to believe this, and we're typically going to explore how language barriers in math and science can cause benefits and also disadvantages to just our community, society, stuff like that. So I guess the first question that I sort of researched a little bit more from Kennedy Krieger Institute is how exactly language barriers in math and science ensue. And I found that in education, a lot of the times, there are barriers with language and when young kids have to learn advanced concepts, especially in word problems. I mean, like, I know for a fact that when I was younger, I always hated learning word problems because I always thought that, like, the amount of text in, like, a mere problem was intimidating, or I didn't understand the wording. And a lot of the time, it's seen that kids have struggles in math class, not because they don't understand like the mathematical concepts, but more so that they don't understand like the language-based concepts, which I thought was interesting. And one thing I was wondering, did you guys ever like have struggles with like language barriers when you guys were in like elementary school or like middle school? Did you guys ever have experiences like that?
Yeah, definitely. By the way, this is May Hall, your another favorite host. Yeah, so I actually moved to America when I was 4, and I distinctly remember like having to relearn a lot of concepts like multiplication. And my native language is actually Hindi, so what they say for multiplication in Hindi is usually like, instead of, for example, 4 times 3, we say 4x3. Yeah, and it was like a little bit hard getting used to that, amongst other things that were just like kind of different to me. So yeah, I definitely have a lot of experience with that.
For me, it's also kind of a similar experience. I went to Singapore at the age of 5, and before my native language was Mandarin, and so like when I first went to an English speaking school, like, for example, English, like, numbers are kind of weird once you go past the first 10 numbers. For example, 11, 1, 1, but you say 11, or, like, 12, same thing. In Mandarin, it's just 十一, literally 10, 1. And so that was definitely something I needed to get used to.
Yeah. I think it's also the way that like math and science subjects are just taught in school, because they're always taught in one specific way in which kids who may like speak even the same language, they have different learning processes that have them take input in a different way than other kids might, which I thought was also a contributing factor to some kids succeeding in school and then others not.
Yeah, definitely. And like, actually, the most common learning style in India is just straight-up memorization, to be honest. Like, a lot of times you'll see kids hunching over their textbooks and, like, literally just reciting it and trying to learn it by heart instead of actually learning the concepts. So that's like another big difference between how STEM is taught in America or like the West versus other places.
And also there's kind of the difficulty in like different students' understanding of like vocabulary for math. For example, like according to a researcher from Forbes, when she was going around and asking, like going around to elementary schools and watching students learn basic math, a problem was what number comes before 84. And that's, she saw a student who apparently didn't understand what before meant, and so kept, so clicked 85 and 86 and 87, etc.
Yeah, that definitely seems like a problem. And did you guys have any experiences with this when coming to Exeter? Or because I know that you're an international student, right, Chachi?
Yes. For me, I'm lucky since I've been using English as my school language since I was 5. So generally, vocabulary has been fine. But also, I've noticed that with certain classmates of mine who used to go to school in a different language, sometimes in class, for example, when I try to explain a concept, it's harder for them to understand, like just simply because they have to first translate the vocabulary back to their native language and then understand the concept. And also I noticed that when I try to explain it to them in like Mandarin, for example, they kind of understood quicker.
All right, so moving on from our own personal experiences, I guess, going into more general examples, there is a story about Galileo where he basically chose to write his scientific literature in Italian just to like reach a larger audience. And we actually see that that's the main reason why he was incarcerated by the Catholic Church. And there is that like famous story again of like his house arrest and how infamous the Catholic Church is for arresting him multiple times. So do you want to expand on that, Rhea?
Yeah, so typically in the 1600 Europe, times during like the infamous scientific revolution in the Renaissance, there was lots of discussion about how scientific knowledge would always be portrayed through like scholarly Latin language. And so a lot of the time, the scholarly elite, they would have more opportunities to collect intellectual input. And a lot of like commoners and, lower class people, they didn't have the opportunity because they mainly spoke in Italian. So it was stuff like that where almost like Galileo had a very headstrong mindset. And I think one of the special things about that was that he was able to almost have more of the general public embrace scientific knowledge easier. And I thought that was a pretty significant historical development, especially in, an apex of intellectual curiosity in Europe.
Yeah, definitely. All right. While math is considered a universal language, the reality is that language barriers like continue to hinder access to STEM knowledge and opportunities, especially in like early education where kids are like more impressionable, but that also contributes further to the fact that once they learn a language, it's harder for them to let go of that. So it's really difficult for non-native speakers to get used to English instruction. So a quick example of this is from a study published in Psychological Science that found that language is integrally tied to numerical cognition, which challenges the belief that mathematical reasoning is entirely independent of language. And that suggests that students with like limited language proficiency definitely struggle with mathematical concepts, not because of a lack of numerical understanding, but due to the language barriers that impede comprehension. And my own personal experience with this, again, going back to like how I was more used to Hindi at one point, now I basically forgot all of it, if I'm being honest. But I remember having to relearn like multiplication and division in English. And it took me a really long time, to the point where they had to move me to a different class in like the second or third grade. And it was really difficult. Like, I was in that class for about 2 years before I could properly understand the English language enough to like participate in a normal class. So is there anything you want to add on to that?
I would really love to, but we do need to play our first PSA.
Oh.
So we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to continue this exciting discussion later. You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM, Exeter.
All right, we are back. That was pretty quick. And you're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM, Exeter. To pick up where we left off, hopefully you guys didn't forget since it's only been about 15 seconds. But to pick up where we left off, we were at with Rhea. So if you want to go ahead.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, I was talking about how my experience relearning math in Hindi was really difficult. And I asked if you have any insight on that, like if you have any experience with that or if you've seen any research about that.
Now, it's sort of interesting because unlike Mehal, I never really learned any like Indian languages. I am of like Hindu descent, but I never learned Hindi. I don't know any of these languages. And I think it's interesting that despite the fact that people who, you know, might not be like trilingual or bilingual, they still deal with struggles in terms of like comprehending scientific knowledge, which I also think is an interesting point because I know that this episode is entitled like Language Barriers in STEM Understanding, but I feel like it's also more of just like wording and also just I guess the way sentences and phrases are formatted so that they only appeal to, I guess, one audience or one type of learning style. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess also another thing that kind of comes up is like in different languages, there's different grammatical structures to kind of express like the ideas of like quantities and everything. For example, in English, you say a cat, but two cats with an S at the end. And well, certain languages don't have this. For example, Mandarin, you got yi zhimao, liao zhimao. It's the same noun. Mm. And some languages also have like separate forms for like two objects versus more than two. And also like just with like quantity words, a few, several, many, all of those like all vary kind of between languages, and that can affect like how quickly children learn.
Yeah, and in addition to that, there's another article that we have from Frontiers in Psychology, and it says that on many occasions mathematics has not been considered a suitable subject to be taught in a language other than the mother tongue, a decision made sometimes because of the complexity and abstraction that the subject possesses in itself. However, there are international schools that implement immersion programs where the second language is acquired naturally and tend to teach the entire curriculum in that language, with the exception of Spanish language instruction. So based on that, we can see that like there is scientific research backing the fact that math should be taught in someone's like original mother tongue or like original language. So the fact that this hasn't been implemented yet is somewhat concerning, in my opinion.
Mm.
But is there anything we can do to help this, or any way we can like raise awareness about this? Because it certainly does seem to be a big problem, especially in schools that have international students or students who don't know English that well.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. There's been so much discussion about like the usage of like Google Translate and AI implementation, especially in, you know, high schools, but it's also starting to integrate more in like middle schools and elementary schools. And I feel like sort of adding on to Mehal's point, it invokes the question, like, are we still facing problems in language barriers still considering the fact that we have translation options? Because I know that, especially, you know, when we were 5, 6, 7 years old, we didn't have the luxury to, like, translate. And, you know, I know Google Translate isn't that accurate, but it's definitely a step up. So I was just wondering, what did you guys take of that? And what do you guys make of, I guess, these new technologies that could perhaps help with language barriers?
Yeah, as someone who's currently taking a Spanish course, and I'm not very good at it, but here we are. I've definitely been trying to learn Spanish. And one thing that I see is, once again, every language that I've seen so far has a completely different number system. And although each language does go off the same basis of like 1, 2, 3, and 4, it's all translated. And I do see occasionally when I'm using Google Translate to like maybe understand my Spanish homework or something, don't tell my teacher. And when I'm using Google Translate, I occasionally see that it's completely inaccurate and it translates numbers out as like maybe nouns or other things like that. So I feel like we could actually tie in the artificial intelligence to this, since we do see that there are suddenly an upsurge of like a lot of companies that claim to be translating accurately using artificial intelligence. And this could be too true, because artificial intelligence has the capability to see context, while simple systems like Google Translate do not. So if anyone wants to like elaborate on that, pick up from there.
I guess something I've noticed is that, like, for example, ChatGPT is always a lot more accurate than Google Translate whenever I've tried to translate something, and I think that kind of shows the potential of AI to be, to like perhaps be a workaround. But I also don't think it can truly like work as well as understanding directly, since there's always that intermediate step. You have to like put something through the translation app and then give it to yourself and then like put it back through the translation app. And like, firstly, that kind of takes more time and like it's not immediate. And also it's like sometimes, for example on tests, if teachers don't want you to use like translates, or if they don't want you to use devices, you can't really do that.
Yeah, and we see this problem also. I remember when I was applying to Phillips Exeter Academy here, I remember on the application, it asked me if I was an international student and if I had taken the TOEFL, I believe it's pronounced, but it's essentially an English test. And I was kind of wondering, like, that must reduce a lot of people's opportunities, since maybe they aren't so good at English, but, like, they still want to go to a good school. And is there any way to like fix this, work around this?
I think it's honestly a really tricky question, because I forever remain grateful for like the opportunities I receive at Phillips Exeter Academy, but I'd say that it's difficult to differentiate like when exactly we should adjust for, you know, like other, I guess, like international students, like to what extent we should do that. But I would say on a historical level, while like on for individual like intellectual progress, it is like difficult to like, I guess, learn new content when you speak a different language. But I would say that like historically, it also helped make like questions about math and science almost like have more answers to them. And I sort of saw that like historically, like the Arabic number system, like that was almost like universally considered to be correct. But then as scientific knowledge started to spread out, you know, globally, it was almost like it was doubted. And it was that is almost like a contributing factor to language barriers. So I think an interesting thing about this topic is that for a while, language barriers almost helped us consider more possibilities for what STEM could be. You know, like, what are the solutions? What are, like, the answers to these questions? Which I think is it's sort of a hot take because it doesn't really apply now with, you know, students attempting to learn, you know, through like Google Translate and AI. But it is one thing to consider, like, can language barriers provide us with more intellectual diversity?
Yeah, that is definitely a valid argument. I would say for the translation tools that it's not really addressing the root of the issue, which is like the unequal language proficiency among like students and researchers. And that's like, again, continuing to affect the participation in STEM fields. And we also see, especially in like scientific journals, all of the top journals, I should probably go ahead and explain. Scientific journals have something called an impact factor, which basically tells us, the society, how much, how credible it is, or how much of an impact it has on the rest of the scientific society. So we always see that the journals with the highest impact factors are all in English. In fact, I haven't really come across a single journal that's been in a language other than English. And that's definitely like another way we see like STEM being kind of inaccessible to really anyone that doesn't know English. At the most, we'd see maybe like another common language such as Spanish or another commonly spoken language. But even then, we see like the most commonly talked about journals like Nature, the Lancet, I believe it's the Lancet, maybe like other publication, other places to publish your papers, they're all in English. So is there like, do you have any insight on this, Ray or Joshi?
I guess kind of adding on, it's almost goes both ways. It's like, language barriers make like entrance into STEM more difficult, but the fact that like a single language kind of has prestige, for example, English in our current world, kind of also reduces like the importance of other languages. And here you kind of see like everyone's learning English. Far fewer people care as much about, say, like French, Germans, and even Spanish. And like, also historically, you can see that like once a language kind of gains like that standing, then the regional languages kind of start to disappear, and as more and more people try to like learn the prestigious language.
I think at a time, this is sort of, you know, like adding on to both of your points. A lot of the time why Americans or just like English-speaking people are mainly surrounded by like English-speaking papers is that there's almost like a political intellectual war in between, you know, like amongst countries. And I think that's something that's also, you know, like rooting back to like historic anecdotes. And it's just something that has almost developed over time where it's not intellectual discovery. It's not something when, you know, sure, we collaborate with, you know, many countries in, you know, like creating biodiversity, for example, stuff like that when we try to collaborate with countries, but then other times that's not really the case. Situations like that, they're very nuanced, and then that creates more trouble for, you know, people who want to experiment with more like advanced scientific knowledge that's in English.
Yeah, and another thing is that, like, we see that educators are, like, actively trying to incorporate languages into their teaching, like, other languages, but it's really difficult since, like, there's many, many languages in just, like, small regions, especially, like, for example, I'm using India again, but we have, like, 100+ languages, and it's really difficult to, like, make sure everyone is accounted for, so I could see why, like, it's a problem that hasn't been fixed yet. But I definitely feel like with this influx of new technology, with like artificial intelligence and like even just other things, like an improvement with technology overall, we probably should find a solution to this sooner rather than later. Yeah. And like, additionally, I, as a student who participates in Harkness in the Exeter classroom, I always see that like people who don't have a lot of experience with English or like even just public speaking in general seem to have a lot of trouble just like bringing themselves to speak up in the classroom. And I can also kind of relate to that since, like, although I am used to speaking English now, quite obviously, it's still a little bit difficult to, like, speak up and when you're not, like, super confident with your words. So I could see, like, a lot of international students kind of trying to find the word for what they're trying to say in English or anything along those lines. So, yeah.
I think it's also very frustrating for international students, too, because a lot of the time when, you know, like, they want to succeed super well at a place like this, they don't have the luxury to do that when language barriers are in the way of them conveying the point that they want to. So then, you know, when they're trying very hard to, you know, make insightful comments, you know, on the Harkness table, it's difficult to do that because then it influences your grade. And then that also creates, like, a domino effect in what future opportunities you might receive in, like, college and research and internships. And I think it's very debilitating for someone's, like, personal journey as an international student. So I guess, I don't know if you guys have any more points about this, but I would love to, you know, sort of enhance more on this topic of Google Translate and AI. And we've tried to prepare something that's a bit different from the norm. I wanted Jiaqi and Mayhal to do a little debate amongst each other. I know that they've already discussed some of their research, but so I wanted them to discuss mainly about language barriers in STEM, you know, that affect today, not really like anything historical or anything in the past, more things that pertain to like modern problems. So I assigned them roles so that they both have different contentions to debate against each other with. So for Jiaqi's side, he is trying to claim that there is not a major language barrier problem in STEM today, while Mayhal is trying to say that there is a major language barrier problem in STEM today. I wanted to do a debate format, but I think we're all pretty comfortable with each other. It doesn't need to be that, I guess, professional. But essentially, Mayhal will be giving her contentions, her research, what she's found, and what her stance is on it in about like a 3-minute contention. Jiaqi will do the same. And then after that, we'll be able to ask questions to each other about the research we found and about the other's arguments. I'll mainly be working as a mediator and a moderator, but I will engage in the discussion when I have something to say. Yeah, I'll do it soon. And then after that, we'll have a little break. And then if applicable, we can do rebuttal arguments. But we'll see how far we get. Get excited. Okay. We're going to transition into our second PSA. You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter.
All right, we're back, and you are listening to WPEA 90.5 FM Exeter. To pick up where we left off, we were about to like start a little debate. Rhea, if our wonderful mediator could get started on that.
Yeah, so do we have any volunteers to, you know, explain their argument?
Right.
Mayhal, it's automatically you. So I'm going to time you, but, you know, if you have more to say, that's okay. So start whenever you're ready. And just a reminder, Mayhal's argument is specifically that there is a major language barrier problem in STEM today. Okay.
Yes, as I've said many times during the past 36 minutes and 15 seconds.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Huh?
Wait.
Okay. Sorry about that. As I've said many times during the past 36 minutes, yes, I do think that there is a big problem with this. Not quite sure how to fix it, though, since it seems to be, like, a pretty finicky problem. But my first point is going back to the article from Berkeley. I'm not sure if I talked about that yet, actually, but I would like to say, quote the study about a Bolivian indigenous tribe. According to the article, some members of the tribe can count indefinitely and others can't count beyond the quote-unquote number words they know, according to the Berkeley study. And this study was actually published in the Psychological Science Journal, and it suggests that the language is integrally tied to numerical cognition. Now, for the actual experiment, 24 of the tribe's study participants who had little formal schooling were shown a group of objects, and for example, 4 buttons, and they were asked to replicate what they saw using different objects like glass beads. Turns out they could only match the exact number of objects if the amount was within the range of the number words they knew. And this is a really interesting topic, because we see that, like, again, another example, each participant received a set of 5 cards. Each card in the set showed a different number of dots. A card with, say, 5 dots was then placed in the middle of a strip of Velcro, and study participants were asked to arrange the cards according to their numerical value on either side of the middle card. Results show that the tribe's study participants were just as likely to organize the cards from right to left as they were from left to right. So this is true not just for numbers, but also for cards that represented size and time, such as cards showing fruit ripening over time. So this definitely shows that there is a huge barrier here. Again, going back to what Rhea said at the start of our episode about the study with the child and how he... Hold up.
Cook, Mayhall. Cook.
The study from Kennedy Krager Institute, saying that the child didn't know what the difference is between before 84 and after 84. Again, we see that here with our Berkeley study, with the tribe's members not exactly knowing, like, how to use prepositions or nouns or anything really, like, aside from the number words they know. So that's my main argument here.
Okay, that was almost perfect. Really close to 3 minutes. Now we're going to have Jachi explain what he's researched and why he thinks that they are not a problem. Language barriers are not a problem in today's day and age. Start whenever you're ready.
Well, language barriers certainly kind of still exist in the modern world. They have improved a lot since, like, a few centuries ago. As firstly, we can see from the Galileo example, before they were specifically attempting to restrict academic knowledge to those with, like, this necessary language. Now the goal is more to actually spread knowledge, and I think that's definitely a major step. And also, there's, like, certain teaching strategies that work better on, like, learners of different languages. For example, like, teaching math-specific vocabulary before, like, they actually join the math class. And also, generally just using more visual learning methods. And also, like, in class, spending more time to actually dedicated to actually, like, forming sentences, like forming, like, proofs, and not necessarily proofs, but generally statements of their mathematical thinking. And this, I got this from Forbes, firstly, the educational writer who went to different elementary schools and looked at different strategies teachers used to teach mathematics, and also accelerate learning, where they examined multilingual learners and which strategies worked best.
Yeah, so I would like to ask Jachi, can you, like, can you provide evidence that what we have as current translation technologies, like, as we were talking about earlier, AI, Google Translate, anything along those lines, are they sufficient to eliminate misunderstandings in these STEM subjects? Because we do see that, like, they could potentially be used, but again, Google Translate isn't super accurate. AI, in the end, it's randomly generated. So is it enough to negate the effect that this language barrier has between the STEM community?
I haven't made any specific research on AI, but I do believe that compared to definitely now, like, we kind of see students using artificial intelligence across many subjects. To what extent of success, that's more debatable. But looking at how much AI has improved just these past 4 years, like, it's kind of remarkable. And I think if we continue at this rate, definitely eventually AI will be able to translate materials well enough. But then, as I said before, there's always the, like, subject of, like, you still need to go through the translation app. It's not like it doesn't actually eliminate the problem of not understanding the language as well.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And on the topic of, like, AI improving, we also see, like, if anyone's on Reddit as much as I am, we see there's, like, an upsurge of AI-generated art and the Ghibli trend again. And we see it's actually pretty accurate. And also that language models are being able to, like, replicate human work with scary accuracy. And I would know. I'm writing a book right now and it's, like... so, yeah. And another question I have... and this is directed to actually both of you, if anyone wants to answer it, is, should we continue, like, this emphasis on English and STEM fields? Is it working? And if it's working, then, like, how well is it working?
It's sort of difficult to answer, considering that we're in a predominantly, you know, like, English-speaking country. I think it honestly really depends on, you know, how much, like, scientific knowledge circulates in a specific country. Because, you know, like, going back to the India example, there's probably, like, we're probably not exposed to tons of, you know, research conducted by, you know, like, Indian researchers, Indian scientists. So I'd say that it sort of depends on perspective. Oh, wow, we have six, sorry, Mayhal sent me a message. But yeah, you know, just continuing forth, I would say that maintaining a predominantly English, like, I guess, like, circulation of knowledge, it's only, like, considered, like, predominantly English from our point of view, which I think is sort of an important thing to consider.
Yeah, definitely. And I actually have a bit of experience with that too, because my father, he's a researcher, and he has a lot of, like, he used to have a lot of trouble, like, phrasing things in English, and then it got better and then it got worse again. We're not going to talk about that. But he writes papers quite often, and I kind of find myself having to, like, occasionally help him, like, spell words and stuff. And even though he is an expert in his field, which is ophthalmology, by the way, we see that, like, a lot of his older papers from back when he was doing his PhD in India, like, have a lot less citations than his more recent papers, which are in English-speaking journals. So I guess that's, like, another piece of evidence for Rhea's point.
Yeah, also, my dad, he speaks Hindi and Marathi, or at least he used to speak Marathi, because I think he's a computer scientist, and once he moved to the United States, he was very much exposed to, you know, like, very, very much, like, Americanized ways of, you know, like, going to work and, you know, like, engaging in STEM subjects. So then eventually he forgot how to speak Marathi, which I think is honestly, it's obviously a bit disappointing because I think it's always important to, you know, like, touch back with your roots, and it also provides more opportunities to, I guess, like, spread knowledge to, like, different people who speak different languages. But that's just it's just a personal anecdote of mine where, like, I can say that, like, while I was, like, sort of, like, negating Mehal's question at the start, I do feel that in some cases, especially for immigrants, it is difficult to, like, maintain their own, I guess, like, languages while living in the United States because STEM subjects are very, you know, like, I guess, surrounded with, like, English language.
Yeah, and we actually have another example of that, which is actually from this article by Language Connections. And apparently there was a team from a European research laboratory and a Korean biotech company, and they were trying to communicate with each other. And from this example that we see that, like, the English language is also almost a common meeting place for teams that speak different languages. So we see that, like, the Korean company and the European laboratory communicated in English despite both speaking languages other than English. So it's almost the norm now, but no one was happy with that. The scientists at the Korean company reported that their professional identity was compromised due to the fact that they were expected to communicate in a language other than their native language. And we also, like, know that not everyone, like, has access to interpreters, and some languages are just too obscure to be, like, known by even the best translators, unless, of course, you get to hire someone from the United Nations. So yeah, that's my take on that.
And I guess that kind of just also demands the question, is having, like, a common language like English to converse in worth it, since obviously we're, like, negating, like, all the other languages and forcing people to converse in something they're not as comfortable with. But, like, going back to the Mehal's example with the two companies, it would have been far harder for them to collaborate had they not both known English. So having English as a common language in some sense kind of, like, spurs collaboration. This also makes it harder.
Yeah, I feel that, like, workers, especially in, like, STEM-based jobs, they've sort of reached, like, common ground on, they've reached common ground on, like, how to, I guess, spread information by speaking English. And while, you know, as Jiachi was talking about earlier, it's less started to become more of, like, a language barrier problem, but then more of, like, a cultural diversity problem. Like, should we risk, like, spreading, like, STEM knowledge and, you know, like with my dad's example, like, he's very Americanized now. He speaks English all the time. And he speaks Hindi and Marathi, you know, like, almost never, you know, like, very little. Is spreading STEM knowledge worth it if it's going to only be centered around one language?
I feel like it definitely is worth it, since I feel like a lot of the knowledge that we get from STEM is definitely, like, saving lives. And obviously, in the long term, that's, like, a lot more important than, like,
yeah,
preserving identities.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like if there is a way to get around it, we should definitely try, because it's still important that, like, people get to live with, like, the way they're comfortable. And we also see that, like, there's, like, ways to translate scientific research, but the reason we probably haven't done it yet is because, like, all the technical jargon is difficult to translate,
yeah,
from one language to another. Some languages just don't have words for things. And, like, for example, there was research on climate change, which was in French language journals, but it was, like, limited in, for example, like, the Congo, due to the fact that it was in French. But by creating, like, bilingual French and English versions, information became, like, more accessible to international researchers.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it isn't just English. It feels like we might just need, like, a way to translate things automatically into the language that people are comfortable with.
Yeah. Actually, I'm looking at an article now, and I honestly think that this is a hot take, but they created a study by Corey Mitchell in 2019, and he's claiming that language barriers can steer immigrant students to STEM courses. So I think he's almost trying to make the argument that because, you know, STEM involves, you know, languages that might be more universal in comparison to, you know, like linguistical subjects or historical subjects or like humanities-esque subjects, that in high school those immigrant children earn about 20% more credits in math intensive courses than they do in English-based courses, quote unquote. So I think it's also stuff like that that's interesting to consider as well.
All right. I believe that we are almost out of time. So I guess that's a wrap. I guess the main idea of this episode was that, like, yes, there are language barriers in STEM. It's a difficult problem to fix, but if there is a way, it's certainly going to be appreciated. So, Rhea, if you want to take it from there.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to add on briefly that we've also discussed a little bit about almost how language barriers can almost make, like, scientific understanding stronger in a way. And they can also encourage, as I was, you know, just speaking about, encourage more immigrants to go into STEM subjects. So I think it's a very nuanced topic, and I think it feels like we were, you know, like going really deep in the topics. You know, we were talking about a lot of stuff, but I think we've mainly just scraped the surface here. So if you guys have any more thoughts, follow our Instagram and maybe DM us. I don't know if you have any suggestions about next episodes, but I was actually like kind of nervous for this episode, but it went pretty well.
All right, make sure to tune in for our next episode, and I believe that is with, let's see,
it's about quantum mechanics and
black holes. That sounds fun.
It's a bit iffy. We're not sure when the next episode will be because Mayhel and I were both busy next week. Look Alive. That was a fun episode. Thank you so much to Chiachi, because I know that he was a bit doubtful about, you know, like, joining this, but I hope that you enjoyed it. I couldn't think of anyone else better to do it. That's basically it. Hope you guys got a nice taster of what this radio show's about. You're listening to WPEA 90.5 FM, Exeter.